So this will be our last class on how to discipline our children. We're going to have to move on. So after this, we're going to talk about positively. So we talked about discipline, and then we're going to talk about instruction. The reason I say that is saying that if you're saving any anecdotes, any positive experiences, anything you want to share to the group, this is your last opportunity, at least with me. Okay, so we have so far looked at two umbrella texts. These are umbrella texts, and everything kind of fits underneath this. The first is Proverbs 22:6. This is the goal. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So that's what we're pressing forward. That's the whole point of this whole discussion, is how do we train up a child in the way that he should go, so that when he is old, he will not depart from it. And then we have that command in Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And so there's those two parts that I was referencing earlier. We want to, we as fathers, and you can expand this to mothers as well, we're not to do what? Provoke our children to anger, but we're to do two things. Namely, we are to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So this is the last class we're going to talk about the discipline, and then we're going to move into the positive instruction. It's very crucial, though, that we do both of these. Not just one. We don't need to just be disciplinarians, but not give them instruction of the Lord. But we also don't want to give them instruction of the Lord and not give them discipline. We need both. So these are our marching orders, discipline and instruction. And so how do we do this? Last time I was here, it's been several weeks now, we left off noting that Hebrews chapter 12 gives us great insight on how to discipline our children. Hebrews 12:5 reminds us and says, "And you have you forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons? My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and he scourges every son whom he receives." And there we have there's so much there, but we have the two basic forms of discipline. We have the discipline or the chastening or the scourging, and we have the rebuking. Don't despise this. It produces a fruit of righteousness. We respect our fathers who did this. It trains us, so forth and so on. The things that we want to look at is these two forms of discipline, which are described as chastening, discipline, and scourging on the one side, and on the other side, rebuking. So when he says scourging here, we've looked at the Greek multiple times, but it's really corporal punishment. That's what he's referring to, corporal punishment. Now, if you type in, I don't want you to do this right now, but if you type in corporal punishment into Google, this is the first thing that pulls up. Anybody knows in Google, all of a sudden, when you put things into Google, there's like an AI thing that shows up? Anybody seen that? There's like this AI algorithm that shows up and like grabs a bunch of articles and creates this little summary. Okay, so that's what happens. You put in corporal punishment, AI shows up, grabs like the top five articles, and then kind of summarizes and puts it into one spot. So here's what it says in Google. Corporal punishment, also known as physical punishment, is any punishment that intends to cause pain or discomfort to a person. It can be used in response to a child's behavior, and it's often inflicted in schools and in homes. So far, so good. Some examples of corporal punishment include spanking, slapping, pinching, pulling, hitting, shaking, punching, kicking, and choking. Corporal punishment also involves instruments such as a leather strap, switches, baseball bats, and fist. You can't make this stuff up. I actually put that into Google, and that's what came out. Now, is that right? Well, it's partially true and partially horrifying. It is right that corporal punishment just means physical punishment, and that corporal punishment or physical punishment is intended to be painful. Painful, but not destructive, not harmful. And we see this actually correlated with the Bible, Hebrews 12:11. Now, no chastening, no discipline, no scourging seems to be joyful in the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So yes, biblical corporal punishment or biblical physical punishment ought to be painful. But painful doesn't mean bruising. It doesn't mean torturing. It doesn't mean breaking bones. It should never result in any bodily harm or damage, and certainly not death or anything of the sort. Painful means just that. Painful means physically uncomfortable and unpleasant. So a little bit the Google answer got right, but a lot of it got wrong. Namely, biblical corporal punishment isn't shaking, punching, kicking, or choking. Right? Amen? Like, that's unacceptable. You should not be shaking people. You should not be punching people. You should not be kicking people. And you definitely shouldn't be choking people. Like, that is not biblical corporal punishment at all. That's child abuse. And it certainly should not involve baseball bats and fist. Right? Nobody's using baseball bats and their fist against children. Okay? That's unacceptable. Again, you might think I just made that up, but it really is the very first result that comes up in Google. So, that is totally inappropriate. Now, let me say this. Last time we were here, again, 3-4 weeks ago, at the very end, it was noted or commented that anything, any instrument other than the hand in Maryland was illegal. And that kind of threw me off because I didn't know that. Well, I looked it up. Parents, that's not true. It's not true that in the state of Maryland that anything but the physical hand is illegal. It's not true. What is illegal is to abuse your child. What's illegal is to use excessive force and to cause physical damage. Now, what is physical damage? Severe bruising and lacerations. So cuts, bleeding, making someone black and blue. That is all what is actually illegal. But the main issue isn't about legality. The main issue is about what is biblical and what is true. But just I want you all to know that regular, biblical, normal corporal punishment, some of you people who have been around for more than 50 years, the stuff that your mom did to you, hopefully the good stuff, not the bad stuff, that's all legal. It still is legal, even in the state of Maryland. But again, what we really care about is not the law of man, but rather the law of God. But it is good to know a little bit about what the laws of the land are saying. So how do we know what biblical corporal punishment consists of? Because Google mentions baseball bats, fists, choking, punching, and shaking. Okay, we just should intrinsically inside of ourselves say no, no, and definitely not. But we still need to figure out how we can actually know from the Bible what this is. So what is biblical corporal punishment and what did it consist of? The answer is we discover this answer the way we discover every answer, by searching the scriptures diligently to find out what was biblical corporal punishment or biblical physical punishment. And the answer is, when we read the Bible, we just find out that that word scourging, which means to flog, refers to the use of a rod. And where? On the backs of fools. This is the method of corporal punishment that's described in the Bible several times. Now, because I have a lot to cover, I have 30 pages here, I'm not sure I'm going to read all these, but I will tell you there's 13 separate passages in the Bible that refers to the use of the rod. So let me just give a survey here, or maybe I'll just read these quick. There are passages in the Bible that describes God using corporal punishment on people. Okay, so the person inflicting the rod is God. So here's a few. 2 Samuel 7:14. This is the passage where God talks about his covenant with David. Everybody remember that passage? God makes a covenant with David and says, this is what I'm going to do to your children. He says, I will be a father to him, and he shall be my son. Good. So father-son relationship. What does that look like? If he commits iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men and with strokes of the sons of mankind. Do you hear it? I'm a father to him, and he's my son. And if he commits iniquity, if he needs discipline, if he needs correction, I'm going to punish him with the rod of men and with the strokes of the sons of men. In Job 9:34, we read, let God take his rod away from me. Job 21:9, their houses are safe from fear, neither is the rod of God upon him. Psalm 89:32, then I will punish their transgression with the rod, and their iniquities with stripes. Do you hear it? Rod, stripes, blows, strokes. Who's the one doing this? Not man. God is described as doing this. And we can add to that Hebrews chapter 12, that he scourges all those he loves. So several passages where God is using the rod and figuratively using stripes and strokes and blows on people. We also have many texts that describe what humans will do to each other. So we have what God does to us, and then what humans will do to other humans. Here's a spattering of them. Proverbs 10:13, wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. There's the rod again. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Proverbs 29:15, a rod and a rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Same two forms of discipline we find in Hebrews chapter 12 is also here. Two things, a rod and rebuke. Rebuke's not a rod, and a rod's not rebuke. You see that? They're two different things. Rod and rebuke, and both of them give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. And Proverbs 26:3, I love this text. It's very witty, very proverbial. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the backs of fools. A lot of texts that describe the rod. Oh, in Proverbs 23:13 and 14, do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod, and you shall deliver his soul from hell. And then Pastor Neil just recently read this verse, 1 Corinthians 4:21. So that's all Proverbs, right? What about the New Testament? Well, we already have Hebrews chapter 12. We look at 1 Corinthians 4:12. This is Paul talking to the Corinthian believer. Do you remember in the text, in the sermon? What do you want? Shall I come to you with a rod or in love and a spirit of gentleness? So what is he saying? Don't make me use the rod, the same rod that God uses on his people, the same rod that Proverbs says is for the backs of fools and talks about disciplining your children. And if one is tempted to think all of that is simply figurative use, well, Deuteronomy 25, verse 2, describes actual corporal punishment meted out in the Old Testament, in God's law. Okay? And here's what we read. If the guilty man deserves to be beaten, the judge shall cause him to lie down and to be beaten in his presence, with a number of stripes in proportion to his offense. Does anybody know the maximum amount of stripes one could receive? Anybody know? Interesting. It is 39, but it's actually 40. But they went to 39 because they didn't want to dare get over 40 because then they would be sinning. So just shave one off there, right? And we know in the Mishnah, we know how they did this. They did 13 here, 13 here, 13 here, 13 here. All right. 13. Anyway, something like that. I've never done the math. I think it might be 13 here, 13 here, 13 here. Whatever. We know that there was at least 13 here and 13 here, and I think there was 13 here, maybe on both sides or one side. You guys do the math. You tell me. I think it's 1, 2, 3. Okay. That's how they did that. And we know that they actually did this because, well, one, they say it. And two, remember Paul, how many times did he receive 39 lashes? 5 times. So they did this. This was actually something that they did do. Okay, so for those who are counting, that's 13 texts in the Bible that describes either God doing this to man or proverbial statements of what ought to be done to man, prescriptive statements, and then we have one that's actually literally done. I'm not counting the ones where Paul went through this. So that's 13 scriptures that refer explicitly to the use of the rod. Now I want to compare this. 13 times the Bible explicitly describes the rod. How many times does the Bible explicitly describe the general resurrection where it has the righteous and the wicked rising from the dead at the same time? Daniel chapter 12, John chapter 6, Acts 26, 3. Some of you build most of your eschatology based on those three verses. Okay, how many scriptures teach that when Christ returns, those who are alive will be snatched up in the air and meet the Lord? I.e., they'll be raptured, they won't die. Matthew 24, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Corinthians 15. That's three, okay? What's the point I'm making? Most of you, and I'll just throw another one out there. How many texts explicitly teach the virgin birth? See what I mean? That's about 3-2. So here's the point I'm trying to make. There are central Christian doctrines that none of us would deny that are only affirmed about 3 times in Scripture. But guess what? One is good enough. Two is great. Three, how much more do you need? Right? God doesn't need to repeat himself a bunch of times. Three is sufficient. There's 13 different times that the Bible refers to the rod. So what do we do with that? I think we affirm it. I think we say, wow, this is actually a lot. This is God teaching us something. And so we should listen. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. You've spoken 13 times about this. Maybe you're trying to get our attention, and maybe there's something that we want to learn. So I think we should. So what are the things that we can derive from these 13 texts that speak about the rod? Well, before I do that, let me mention something. There are multiple types of rods in the Bible, okay? Multiple types of rod. There's a walking stick. There's like Aaron's rod. It's a giant walking stick, okay? It's like almost like monks carry this thing around. You can beat people with this, and it's a very big, strong stick. That's the type of rod. There's also a rod that Jesus has. Anybody know that rod? What's the rod that Jesus has? Okay, there's a shepherd rod. That's kind of like the walking stick. There's a rod that Jesus is described as having. Anybody remember? It's a rod of iron. And what does he do with that rod of iron? He shall rule him with a rod of iron, and he shall dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. So this rod is a giant iron rod, like a scepter, that can literally dash people and smash them into pieces. Okay, whatever you do, don't use a rod of iron. Anybody see that? Very bad idea. And a rod of iron is a very dangerous, blunt weapon. If you try to use that against a police officer, they will shoot you, okay? Because it's considered a deadly weapon that could kill someone. This is not what they were using. Don't use a walking stick either, because, once again, if you try to use that against a police officer, they will consider it a club, and they will shoot you. Make sense? You got a little flappy thing that flaps in the wind, and take that as a police officer, they will not shoot you. They'll probably knee you, kick you, and shoot you with maybe the non-lethals, because there's a difference between a giant blunt object that can kill, a rod of iron, and something that is meant to simply to sting. Okay, so there's a few things that we can learn that I'm going to try to extrapolate from this rod. But first thing we should try to extrapolate some principles is that the rod is not meant to kill, it's not meant to maim, it's not meant to destroy or to bruise. Rather, it is an instrument for discipline. It's not meant as a deadly weapon at all. It's meant to help, not to hurt. Does that make sense? You're not inflicting damage on your child. You're not trying to teach him a lesson. I'm going to put him in the ground. No. The rod is an instrument of discipline, not an instrument of destruction. Notice also where the rod is applied. We saw this in dozens of scriptures, but again, I'm not going to go through all of them. I'll just give you one. Proverbs 26:3, a whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the backs of fools. Once again, think about an iron rod. That iron rod that Jesus used to destroy vessels. If someone were to use that on your back, what would happen to it? Come on. You got a big, long pole. I mean, the way you can go to my house right now, my little farm, and I have gate fences, little gate poles, right, that you put the little chain link fence about this big. So it's an iron rod. What do you think would happen if I grabbed that iron rod and took it to someone's back? Grown man, little kid, doesn't matter. What do you think would happen? Think they'd be walking? Their back would break, right? An iron rod to your back would break it. If you take that same thing, same diameter, like that thick, this long, if it's wood, and whack someone in the back, what do you think is going to happen? Same thing. Don't do that. So we see if the rod was designed for the backs of fools, it can't be that thing. Does everybody see that? It can't be that thing, because that would destroy, cripple, and kill. So again, it's parallel to a whip for the horse and a bridle for the donkey. In the Septuagint, it says a goad for the donkey. So it's a rod for the backs of fools. It's applied to the back, which must mean it cannot be a blunt object meant to destroy and to damage. Now, some of you might think, but surely this cannot be literal. This cannot be literal. It must be figurative. Well, one way to always test yourself is just to ask yourself, what has the history of interpreters thought about this? Does that make sense? Sometimes we can be culturally blinded, and we cannot see things clearly because of our culture that we swim in. So sometimes the way to get out of your culture is just to find godly men of yesterday age and see what they said. So that's what I did for you. Here's the Jameson Fawcett Brown Bible commentary. I'm not going to get obscure commentaries. I'm going to get ones that you all have access to and probably is in Pastor Neil's library, some of these. Okay? This is what Jameson Fawcett Brown says. The rod is as much needed by fools and as well suited to them as whips and bridles are for beasts. No figurative interpretation, right? Just as you actually literally need a whip, a bridle, and a goad for a beast, so you actually need a rod for the back of a fool. Matthew Poole, a rod for the backs of fools, which is most proper and necessary for him, not words but blows, make him better. Again, Matthew Poole is not some obscure person. Matthew Poole is not inspired, but he is a godly man from yesterday's age. Okay? He says again, it is most proper for him and necessary for him. And again, if you wonder if this is figurative, no, not words, but blows make him better. And then Gill, a rod for the backs of fools. Instead of honoring being given to him, stripes should be laid upon him. Don't give him honor, rather give him stripes. So again, are all these commentators inspired? Of course not. They're not inspired. But it does show that in the history of interpretation, good, godly, Puritan men did not think that this rod was simply figurative, but they thought it was really a rod for the backs of fools. So, what can we learn from these texts? What are some principles that we can derive from them? The first, I already mentioned this. Discipline ought not to be destructive and ought not to be dangerous, right? You should not be using large, blunt objects. You should not be causing damage. Discipline is never meant to break bones, but rather it's simply meant to be a stinging sensation of pain that causes temporary pain but not physical damage. And that's the first principle. It's not meant to hurt or damage or destroy. The second principle of biblical corporal punishment is that it's not attacking somebody, right? So remember the Google article? It talked about punching, choking, kicking. That's attacking someone, right? If you want to attack somebody, you would punch, choke, and kick. But that is not biblical corporal punishment. Rather, it's a very control thing. It's rather a rod to the back of a fool. It's not a punch. It's not a slap. It's not an attack. You're not wrestling with the person and beating them up. None of that language should apply. It's rather a very controlled thing of a rod to the back of a fool. The third principle, it is not a shaming thing. There's no sense of shame here. There's no sense of humiliation. You shouldn't take your kid and dress him up in a weird outfit and bring all his friends over and just laugh at him. Does that make sense? It's not the point. The point isn't to humiliate them. It's not to shame them. It's not to throw pie on their face. It's none of that. It's rather just a stinging sensation that causes momentary discomfort or pain. It's also, in no way is it a sexual thing at all. There's no sexual connotations to this whatsoever. A rod to the back of fools could be done publicly. It could be done for females. It'd be done for males. Again, rod to the back of fools, it was done, right? The Jews would do this to grown people, old people, young people, and everything in between, because there was no sexual connotation to this whatsoever. It's not sexual in the least. It's a rod to the backs of fools. So no humiliation, no sexual connotation. And I mentioned this last time. I think there is some wisdom also in the fact that it's an instrument. Some might debate this, but it's an instrument instead of your hand. Okay. Now, some of you, and you might know this already, that I actually suggest the actual use of an actual rod on the actual backs of a fool. Why? Because I think it's a perfectly good method, and I advise you to consider doing it. Now, for some of you who do not agree with that and think that's a bad idea or whatever, then I would simply advise you to try to internalize as many of the principles from the literal use of a rod to the backs of fools as you possibly can. I think the farther you deviate from the actual practice that's mentioned, the more likely you could run into some trouble, right? The more likely that you could end up getting into some problems in that area. I'll give you an example. The last time I was disciplined, I remember, I'm not going to tell you who, but you can probably guess. I was disciplined. I definitely deserved this discipline. I was acting very, very poorly and badly. And I remember I was told that the instrument used was a spatula. I can't remember if it was like the thing that you know, you could put soup in and it's like the thing that has depth, or was it like a spatula that was long? It didn't matter. It was a spatula. And I was told, you know, the normal way, take down your pants, bend over, all of this. And I remember just to this, I'm not damaged, right? But I remember just the way I felt was a sense of shame, horror, and violation. And this was not the intent. I know that the intent was just to cause a stinging sensation, which it did cause, but it was just shame, horror, and violation. And I just don't think that that is, well, I know from the Bible that's not the purpose. Again, I don't think this person intended to do that, but that was not the purpose to do that. The other reason I would not advise a spatula is that's a very dangerous object. It's full of metal, right? So if someone loses control with a spatula, what kind of damage could they possibly do with that object? I think it's very ill-advised. Okay, so we've talked about biblical discipline and what it physically looks like. And we've talked about some principles that should govern its use. So what I'm going to do next, talked about what it actually was and what some principles I derived from it. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to talk about, okay, so that's what it looks like. Or if you don't like those methods, then just, like I said, internalize it and get as close to it as you can possibly do. So now we're going to talk about some principles that should govern when it's used, how it's used, those kind of things, right? We're talking about the actual application. But before I go on, I'm going to stop here and say, is there any questions, comments, or concerns? Any input from anybody? Okay. If there is, just let me know. Okay. So, again, we talked about what it actually looked like in the Bible. And now we're going to talk about some principles that should govern its use. Here they are. If you have, I don't usually tell you to write anything down, but if you want to write this down, you can. You don't have to. But here they are. It should be done early. It should be done often. It should be done consistently. And it should be done in control. I'll say it again. It should be early, often, consistently, and in control. Now, let me give a trigger warning. Has anybody seen this before? You start reading articles now. I've seen this in like the last couple years. You read an article, and at the very top, it says, trigger warning. This article might trigger somebody. Have I seen that? Anybody seen this? Nobody? You seen it? Yeah. How long has that been around?
5 years.
5 years? 10 years. It's a new thing. Right? Trigger warning. Okay. Well, I'm going to put a little asterisk here. I'm going to put a little trigger warning to this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to describe that principle early, often, consistently, and in control. And then instead of just giving you a nebulous somehow apply that, I'm going to tell you how I apply that in my own home. And the reason I say trigger warning is this. Some of you might not agree with the way that I apply it in my own home. Some of you, on the opposite, might think, well, I'm saying this is the only way it should be done, and then somehow I'm condemning the rest of you. It's not the case. Rather, all I'm simply doing is showing you early, often, consistent, and in control. And then I'm going to describe how I do it, and I would just encourage you to just consider it. Eat the chicken, spit out the bones. You say, I don't like that? You don't have to do it. I'm just giving you an example. I want you to see how I apply this in my own life just for your consideration. Again, I'm not saying you must be me or you must do it the way I do it. Just giving you an example. Okay. So, the first principle for consideration is to do it early. Can somebody read Proverbs 19:18? Somebody have that for me. Proverbs 19:18. Preferably in the New King James, if you have it. Or the KJV.
Yeah. Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction.
Yeah. Some translations say, discipline your son, for there is hope, i.e. that your discipline will, you can discipline them knowing that the discipline, there's hope in it, that it will work. That's fair enough. But I like the translation. I think they're both true. Discipline your son while there is hope, and you do not set your heart on destruction. Or, remember, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he shall not depart from it. Or we have a saying that we use, a proverbial statement, old dogs can't be taught new tricks. It's hard, right? It's hard to teach a dog that's been trained, and this is the way it does, to do these new tricks. It's easier to begin early. It's easier to prevent people from ever doing methamphetamine than the guy who's hooked on methamphetamine to get him to stop doing that. Isn't that true? Which one's easier? To keep your kid from becoming a drug addict or to try to break the drug addictness of him after he already is a drug addict? We all know better to get it early than to try to deal with it late. Amen? Does that make sense? So, discipline your son while there is hope, while you, before he grows up, before he becomes entrenched. Do it early, folks. How soon? How early is early? Is early 8, 10, 15? Hopefully not 15. Come on, let's bring it down. It's not 15. Hopefully it's not 8. Is it 6? Come on, let's keep bringing it down. Is it 4? You know, I looked this up. I was wondering, what do people say on Google? It's always interesting. Sometimes I get my anecdotal, this is what I think culture says, and sometimes you guys look at me like, I don't think culture teaches that. I'm like, I don't, we live in a different culture then. So sometimes just doing Google is helpful because what people recommend. I found people recommend around 8 months, some say 12 months, and then some say a year and a half to 2 years. That's what Google says. So it's a range, 8 months, 12 months, a year and a half to 2 years. What do I say? I would say you should discipline your child when you see a clear, discernible, disobedient act of the will. You should see a clear, discernible, disobedient act of the will. If you don't see that, you ought not to be disciplining someone. You're not disciplining because you're mad. You're not disciplining because you're irritated. You're disciplining because you see a clear, discernible, disobedient act of the will. So, should you be disciplining your one-month-old? Do you see a clear, disobedient act of the will? I don't. I don't recommend it. I think that would be sinful and bad. So when do you see a clear, discernible, disobedient act of the will? Well, I would say this. Well, how do you know? Do they understand yes or no? If you're telling them yes or no, what are you doing? Are you not trying to teach them to use their will appropriately? Yes, this is okay. No, this isn't okay. Are you not dealing with the child's will? I don't talk to my one-month-year-old about yes and no. And if I do, it's just pure personification. It's pure. Maybe it's training and practice. But I'm not really trying to communicate to them, cut that out. In fact, I don't even think I say yes or no, do I? I don't think I say yes or no to my one-month-year-old. It doesn't happen. But there is a point where you start to see that clear, discernible act of the will, that kicking, that squirming. You start to see that this isn't just involuntary movement, that this is being chosen, and then you tell them yes or no. You also, at this stage, begin to praise them. Good boy. Sounds like a dog. Good boy. Bad boy. Right? You start to praise them and start to speak to them in this way. So I would say, when should you start disciplining your children? When you start to praise them or when you start to rebuke them? You know when that happens. When they start doing good things, you tell them good. Start doing bad things, you tell them bad. No. Start at a very young age. So this is how I do it. When you start to see that clear, discernible, disobedient act of the will, this is usually, the first time I usually see this is around diaper changes. You start seeing that scooting, that kicking, that squirming. Not just baby stuff, but you start to see clearly that they are not liking it. Babies don't like their diaper change. You wouldn't either. It's cold. Boom, it hits them. They're unhappy. Get off me, right? You start to see that. So at that small age, when you start to see very clear, again, it takes wisdom, but you should be able to see it when it's just wham versus when they're actually fighting you, kicking you, that kind of thing. When you start to see that, clear act of the will, disobedient act of the will, then what I recommend, at least what I do, a small swipe on the leg. I say no, boom. It's not painful. There's no damage. In fact, at this time, I don't, again, these are principles. At this time, I probably don't even use a rod. My hand's probably sufficient. Because all I'm just trying to do is alert them. Hey, I mean business. Cut that out. Stop it. Right? And you do that consistently with the other principles. You do that consistently, and guess what? The child, all of a sudden, you can change their diaper. You know, just on an anecdotal story. Just the other day, Stephanie was there. Just the other day, I was at Costco. And we got our stuff, and we were loading up. And I seen this parent. And I don't know how old this kid was. A year and a half, maybe 2 years old. Right? Three? Stephanie says 2 or 3. He was a little guy. And I saw this poor dad, and he was trying to change this kid's diaper, and he couldn't do it. The kid wouldn't get down. The poor dad, isn't that true? He was just fighting. It almost looked like he wanted to send out a flag, help, help. And I wanted to go over there and help him, but I said, nope, this is not my business. I'm just going to use this as a sermon application for later. And I kept going. Poor guy. He couldn't control his 2- and 3-year-old to even change his diaper. Don't be that guy. Right? You're bigger. You're stronger. Don't wait till he's 3 and he's completely out of control and you have to literally wrestle him to the ground to change his diaper. Start early. So I do, like I said, simple swipe. Simple, boom. Hey, cut it out. Stop it. Don't do it. Now, as they get older and older, again, those same principles of that rod are just being applied higher and higher and higher. So simply, if he's 8 years old, that's probably not going to do very much. It's not painful. It's not alert. It's not going to do anything for an eight-year-old. But for a very small child, that's getting their attention, and that should be sufficient. The more older they get, the more it's going to have to be a greater and greater intensity. But again, it's the principle is discomfort. That little right there, what's that? That's a little stinging sensation, right? Not causing any bruising, just a little sting. Hey, cut it out. Stinging sensation, not damage. So I would say, parents, you really want to get ahead of this. If you start trying to discipline your kid at 2.5, it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be an absolute nightmare on your hands. I've seen it. I've seen kids, I don't remember, maybe 1.5, 2 years, whatever. And you can just see the rage of the child. Pure rage and hatred coming out of that 2-year-old. How dare you take this away from me? Just, if they were big enough, they would strangle you. You can see it. They're just, right? It's unbelievable how much anger and rage is in that small child. That is not normal. Or put it differently, that is totally normal. It is totally normal to see that, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't. If you get on this early enough, you're not going to get that kind of rage, that kind of just pure, it's scary. It really is. It really is scary. So I would say, don't wait until you have a nightmare on your hands, or at least you're fighting an uphill battle. Start early. You will be very happy that you did. Let me stop there. Any questions on that? Any thoughts on that? You know, where I learned that, actually, and I mentioned this to somebody else. When I was first becoming a parent, there was a very godly couple. The name was the Glicks. They had 4 children. Boom, 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 boom. And they were unbelievably well-disciplined. They looked good. They smiled. They were happy. They were respectful. They loved their parents. And it wasn't just artificial. When I would go, it was kind of interesting, too. I would say to the Glicks, wow, your children are so well-disciplined. And you know what they said to me? Yes, they are. No, they never said that. In fact, good parents almost never respond that way. You know what they said? They were just like, I don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what I deal with. I've seen that same reaction almost universally on people with good children. But anyways, they were unbelievably well-behaved. And then I'd go over to their house, and you know what I saw? I saw happy kids. They were not abused. They were not traumatized. They were smiling. They were laughing. They were playing. They were just children. It was so wonderful. It was so beautiful. And so what I asked them was, teach me. That's what I said. I said, I may think I know what to do, but I have no children of my own. I had no children at that time. I have 0 children of my own. Please teach me. And it did. And some of these principles like this early, I got from them. They're the ones who said to do it early. And, you know, I thought, I don't know about that. That's what I thought. I don't know. This seems a little weird. But I saw other parents do it. I did it myself. And it seemed to have, I've seemed to be pleased with the results. So that's what I would just recommend. That's something that I think you all should do. Or put it differently, you all should be that for somebody else. Either way. If you don't have any children of your own, then I would say as that time comes around, find some people that you, not me, you respect, that you think this is good. I'm liking what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing abuse. I'm seeing love. I'm seeing healthiness. Find that person and ask them. Again, you don't have to be their slave. You can eat the chicken and spit out the bones. But it's sometimes very helpful to say, hey, what's going on here? You probably aren't just lucky. There's probably something going on here. There's probably something helpful. We say the same thing with a dog trainer. If your dog can spin around, jump up and down, do like this, walk off the leash, I'm going to be like, wow, my dog never did that. And I'm not going to conclude that you have the magic dog. I'm going to think, maybe there's maybe some techniques here. Maybe, what kind of treats are you given? Does that make sense? You should do that. Be humble. Say, hey, I can improve. By the way, we can all improve. Every one of us. There's always something new that we can learn. I'll just give you an antidote here. I'm not even sure where I got this. But for the longest time, I didn't, you know, all I, and we only talked about this here, corporal punishment, physical punishment, discipline, right? But I noticed that there were certain things that I could not get my children to do. No matter how much, we'll talk about consistency in a second, I just couldn't get it to be done. So what I discovered is that for certain behaviors, the best thing to do is actually reward positive behavior. Positive reinforcement actually does work. Not all the times. Kids punching another kid in the face, saying, I'll give you stickers if you stop doing that. Probably not going to work very well. It isn't going to work. That should not be your response, right? But for certain behaviors, we want something positively done. We want to encourage a good behavior. Just simply punishing the bad manifestation showing up is not actually that should be done, but it also is also helpful to do some kind of positive reinforcement. When you see good behaviors, to reward that and say, this is good, and to praise it. Does that make sense? Again, I don't know where that came from. That came later on in my life. I don't know if I came that to my own mind. I don't remember if I remember that from second grade with my sticker chart in second grade. I don't know where I got it from, but I actually do have a sticker chart in my house. And it's actually been very helpful. It actually works. So you see what I'm saying? We all have things that we can learn. We all have things that we can grow. Okay, early. Early. Second, often. Discipline should be often. If the child disobeys and it's obvious that they are acting sinful, you should correct it and rebuke it. Don't just overlook it. If you see a child, obviously, not just like being a child and accidentally spilling some milk. Don't cry over spilled milk. Their children are just childish. Children are children, right? They have childish physicality and things of that nature. But sometimes it's clear, I say sometimes, many times, parents. Again, don't be their professional lawyer either. I'm not saying that you should think the worst, but if you see a clear act of disobedience, don't look for another explanation. There is no need for another explanation. There's a sinful heart right here. Don't be surprised when your kid disobeys. Don't be surprised when your kid acts sinful. They will do it. But when you see a very clear act of disobedience, rebuke it. Correct them. Tell them that they're doing what is wrong. Stop doing that. Stop yelling. Stop screaming. Stop slamming the door. Stop it. Rebuke them and tell them no. And to me, that's sufficient. We have those two tools, rebuke and discipline. The first time someone does something wrong, there's no reason, at least, especially if it's not an extremely heinous act. And usually sin goes from down to low, from small to great. Jesus said it begins with lust, ends in adultery. Begins with lust. Correct the lust. Don't try to go after the adultery. Does that make sense? So usually if you get it low, you won't have to. It won't manifest itself that way. But anywho, if you see an act of disobedience, correct them, tell them this is wrong. And to me, that's sufficient. The next time you see the same offense, tell them, stop slamming the door. Yes, sir. No, sir. Okay, good. And then 2 days later, 15 minutes later, wham, the door is slammed. You know kids have incredible memories? Did you know that? Kids have incredible memories. Do not underestimate a child. Let me tell you how incredible kids' memories are. My second youngest, used to be my first youngest, my second youngest is named Anna. She's over there. She's not even two yet, okay? Her grandfather is named Pop-Pop. That's his name. Just the other day, he gave a little stuffed animal to her. He says, here you go. He gave her a stuffed animal. Do you know, the next day she said, Pop-Pop gave this to me. Pop-Pop gave this to me. And then a couple days later, she came back. Pop-Pop gave this to me. Amazing. Isn't that amazing? Less than 2 years old, recognized this was a gift from a person she sees like once a month. Amazing. Kids have incredible memories. So how can my two-year-old remember that Pop-Pop gave her this stuffed animal, and yet my five-year-old can't remember not to slam the door? Maybe they do remember. Don't underestimate a child's memory. Believe me, they will remember. It's also why you shouldn't abuse them. Believe me, they will remember. You think, oh, they won't remember. You're too young. They will remember. You're a dangerous person. Stay away from you. Kids remember. They know you're a safe person or a dangerous person. They know if you've been kind to them or not. They know, stop slamming the door. Don't be their professional lawyer. So you start to see that, right? So they slammed the door once. Hey, cut it out. Good enough. I rebuked you. Slam the door again. At least, as for me, it's time to escalate. Obviously, the rebuke did not work. Does it have to be actually perfectly like that? Could it be maybe I'll give them two? Who knows? But in general, I'm gonna warn you, cut it out. That's your warning. I've rebuked you. After that, I'm not going 15 times. I'm not going 20 times. This guy is not going to be a nag. The book of Proverbs is all about the nagging woman. You can add the nagging man too. Like a dripping, I'm not going to be a nag. I told you, this was wrong, that's it. Once you have shown yourself to be incorrigible, you've shown yourself that you've committed the same offense twice, I know that you know the truth, and yet you're going to continue to sin, now you're going to be disciplined. I recommend you discipline them at that point. Don't beg them. Don't shout at them. Don't scream at your kids. Don't do that. You don't want to be screamed at, right? If your kid walks away with tears in your eyes, it shouldn't be because you screamed at them, that you belittled them, that you called them all kinds of horrible things. If there's tears in their eyes, it should be because you controlled, in love, disciplined them, not because you were mean to them. Don't be mad at them. I'm mad. I'm upset. I'm going to turn my back on you. Don't shame them. Don't do any things. Rather, what I would do, and what I suggest you doing, is simply saying, get the rod. Right? Slam the door, cut it out. Okay. Slam the door again, get the rod. This is what it looks like in my house. Get the rod. This is what old school parents used to say, boy, get me a switch. You can type that into Google. Boy, get me a switch. You'll find comedians talking about this. This is what they used to do. Go get me a switch. Go get me a rod. But I digress. Okay. So very rarely do I personally get the rod myself. Very rarely do I go and fetch the rod. Do you know why? Why don't I get the rod? Why didn't Grandma get the rod? Why didn't Grandma go get the switch? Anybody have any ideas? Grandma said, boy, go get the switch. Why didn't she say, boy, be right there. I'll be right back. I'm going to go get the switch. Anybody have any idea? Not a bad idea. Time of reflection. It also gives you time, doesn't it? It gives you some time to calm down. Gets you some time to think. Gets you some time to reflect on what's about to happen. But you know the number one reason I say, go get the rod, go get the switch? One, because I don't have it on me. If I had it on me, I wouldn't just throw it, go get it, fetch. I wouldn't do that. If I had it on me, I would just use it. But number one, I don't have it on me. Number two, I'm lazy. That's the truth. And guess what? You're lazy too. A different word of saying that is you're efficient. We don't like wasting energy, right? You guys parked here, not over there. And definitely not over there. Why? Because you're efficient. You didn't want to walk 2 miles to come here. Because you're trained to be efficient. You have energy to use, and your body doesn't want to just waste it unnecessarily. So the reason that I do it is because if I say, go get the rod, that little bit of me having to get up, maybe I'm doing something, maybe I'm focused. That little bit of me having to get up might be enough for me to say, nah, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to shirk my responsibility. It's a whole lot easier not to use the rod than to use it. So something to think about. Go get it. So I said, go get the rod. And then, after that, turn around. Usually one is sufficient. One to the back of fools. And then it's over. That's it. Slam the door. Told you not. Do it again. Go get the rod. Give me the rod. Turn around. There it is. That's it. No grounding, no I'm mad at you, no upset, no anger, none of that. It's very controlled. It's just like that. And afterwards, here's the rod back, take it back, and then that's it. Reconciliation. You did wrong, you sinned, you were punished, that's it. I'm not going to be mad at you for weeks. I'm not going to keep bringing this up. It is over. I'm also not going to do this. Again, this might be controversial. If you do this, it's fine. I'm not condemning you. But I don't give hugs. I don't apologize. I don't try to win anybody back. No. Why? Because I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. You did wrong. I did actually my responsibility was to correct you when you did wrong. I've disciplined you. I'm not angry at you. You're the one who sinned. And now you can be brought back to the family. It simply is all over. Now, a few things. At least, again, this is how I do it. I'm not saying you have to do it. This is how I do it. Notice, again, I said go get the rod, come back, turn around, do this. I personally, this is not a big spectacle. It's not a big show. There's no private parts being exposed. There's no reason for this to be private, at least in my home. It's not private. This is something that all the children will participate in, and all of them will go. It's not intense. It's casual. It's normal, and I would say it's effective. There's no humiliation. There's no exposure. No, none of this. So that's how I do it. It's very, very simple. All right, any questions? Ooh, no, we don't have time for questions. We got to move quickly. All right. So, consistently, first principle, early, second principle, was, what was the second principle? Often. Third principle is consistently. We do this consistency. Again, I don't have time for this. Consistency over intensity. Just take that. Consistency over intensity. You should not be trying to make this the most miserable, most painful, the most, I'll scar you forever. You'll never, people do that too. You'll never get bad grades again. You'll never disrespect me again. Don't do that. No. You over the long haul. Consistency over intensity. You don't need 15 strokes. You don't need 39 blows. You don't need the screaming, the yelling, the shaking, none of this. It's totally unnecessary. Just as you see the offense, discipline the offense, you don't need to reconcile, actually. If you didn't do anything wrong, you discipline him, move on. It's over. It happens again, here it is. Again, you should be thinking, oh, you slammed the door two times, so now you're really going to get it. No, you don't need that. You already forgave them over that offense. Isn't that what God does to you? You repent of your sins, and what happens? He restores you. And then you get a new day, new offense. I'm not disciplining you for the 10 times you slammed the door. I'm disciplining you for the one time you slammed the door. Does that make sense? I'm disciplining you for the offense that I saw, not for the past record. The past record is clear. It is over. Consistency over intensity, people. If you get that, you'll never abuse your child. I promise you, you won't.
I'd say, I agree that you didn't do anything wrong. You don't need to apologize. But there is time for reconciliation for the child. So, like we always, they have committed an offense. They do need to ask for forgiveness and come back. And so we do have time for that afterwards.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. Absolutely not. If you find that healing and restorative, no problem. Never going to condemn anybody. I just personally, I can tell you, we don't do it. The restoration is the immediate love. It's the immediate, you can come sit on my lap. We can go play games. It's over. That's how we do it. But again, not condemning anybody else. But the restoration is immediate. We're back in good graces. It's over. It's forgotten. I'm not bringing it up again, right? The only person, in my home at least, the only person who's going to keep thinking about it is them for 5 minutes if they're still going like this. As soon as they're ready to be cool, it's all good. But again, that's just how me. I'm not condemning anybody. Go ahead.
I think that to some degree, like thinking back on my childhood, I think generally speaking, what you're saying, I kind of agree with. But I think there is a side where sometimes they're just like blatantly defiant children who like they can understand that they did something wrong, but at the end of the day, they're still mad at you because we're all sinners, right?
Yep. I think you need to have wisdom. If you start to see bitterness, you need to address that, right? And then again, you need to use wisdom. And I don't have time. We can talk about this offline. But sometimes you have to accept defeat. And I just don't have time to really go into that. But sometimes you're seeing so much disobedience, so much anger, you can get into this 45. Don't do that. There's no reason to get into the 45-minute session. Discipline them. Now they're throwing a fit. I would say, now I'm disciplining you for your poor attitude, for your throwing a fit. But guess what? You'll never usually win that. Usually, and then I'm going to throw him even more of a fit. And then I would say back out at that point. Usually, I discipline you for bad attitude again, I discipline you for bad attitude, that's it. I'm probably going to, win over consistency, people. You will win over consistency. Don't try to, you'll lose that battle, you'll win the war. Consistency over intensity. But yes, if you start seeing bitterness, absolutely address it. Let me just say this. Again, a lot of people think that corporal punishment is some kind of evil thing or some kind of bad thing. I think it's the opposite. I think it's actually one of the most loving things you could possibly do. Because here's what I've noticed. If I were to drag it out and say, I'm going to punish you for a week. I'm taking this thing forever. What ends up happening is I see a lot more bitterness from that, from anger from that. If I say, you're excluded from the table. You're not going to eat this whole meal. That whole time you go in there fuming, angry, upset. It usually spurs up a lot more controversy. Just my recommendation, just deal with it. It's over within a few seconds. It's literally over. The stinging sensation lasts. Try it on yourself. See what happens. That's it. It's over. It's done. Anybody else? Consistency over intensity. Again, everybody wants to know more about that. We can talk about that. Okay, in control. So we have early, often, consistent, in control, people. You want to be in control. You're not beating them up. You're not attacking them. You're not being violent toward them. You need to be in control. This is not an explosive anger. Now, on the flip side, do you need to be kumbaya? You need to be have no sense of anything going on here. That's totally unrealistic. And it's not very effective. I don't have time to mention this other principle, but it should be timely. If they do an offense here, it shouldn't be, wait till your father comes home 4 hours from now. The kid will not remember and will not associate the offenses. It shouldn't be, wait till we, right? Sometimes you might need to pull the car over and say, this gots to stop. Does that make sense? You want to do it timely. But you want to do it in control. So you got to balance those two principles. You don't need to be blazing mad and fuming, but you need to have some control. But I would honestly say the best way to be in control is to apply that principle I said before, often inconsistent. The reason we often lose control is that we're yelling, we're begging, we're screaming, we're overlooking 100 offenses, and then we're just like, that's it, I can't take it anymore. Anybody have a discipline like that? Don't raise your hand. But I just can't take it anymore. That is a good way to lose control. And when that happens, sometimes you should say, I need to be disciplined. Because the reason it got to this point is because I have failed to do it before. Any of you parents, don't raise your hand, do the counting game. You need to come over here. Not coming. Wait till I count to 10. 10, 9, 8, 7. When does the kid come? At 1. Every time. You trained him that way. You trained him to ignore you until you get down to 1. Don't do that. Come over here now. Right now. As soon as I say it, you come over here. Here's the point. If kids are smart, if they know that it doesn't mean anything until you yell, they won't listen to you until you yell. If they know they can get away with 100 offenses and then the 101 happens, they're going to do it all the time. If you're consistent, though, you're not boiling over, and you have, it's very easy not to lose control if you're doing it on a much more consistent basis. But just be in control. Be in control, people. Don't lose control. Don't attack them. But let me just say this. Guess what, parent? You're a sinner, and you will lose control. It will happen. Almost every one of you probably have lost control. I don't need any confessions, but you probably have. And this is why I would simply say, use a method that is safe. So when you do lose control, you don't hurt anybody. If you lose control with a paddle, you're going to jail. It's really true. You can look up articles right now. People lost control with a paddle. They put their kids black and blue right here. They went to school. They pulled down the pants, saw them black and blue. The parents locked up and gone to jail. Be very, very careful. When you do lose control, I would simply say, have an instrument that's not going to cause damage. You're not going to kill anyone. You're not going to maim anyone. You're not going to do shaking baby. None of that. Don't do it. The thing in your hand should be safe. It should be safe. That way, if you do lose control, you're not going to kill anybody. You're not going to hurt anybody. So just think about that. When you're picking your instrument, think, what happens if I swing too hard? You want to use all your self-control as doing this? What happens if I swing too hard? What happens if I swing too much? And if the answer is, I could maim, destroy, and kill, I would say don't use that. Don't do it. All right, that's it. Any questions, comments, concerns, anything else? This is the last time we're talking about this. Any antidotes? Anybody have biblical discipline in their own home that's been helpful? Go ahead. No problem with that. I agree with you in the sense that nobody should ever be disciplined without knowing why. Right? Nobody should be wondering, why am I being disciplined? Hence why I say it should be timely. It should be consistent. It should be early. They should know. And I would also say that's why I rebuke them first. But again, if you want to, it's the principles. Remember that trigger warning? It's not the application. This is how I do it. But it's the principles that matter. As long as the kid knows. Well, amen.
Find out what they were feeling on the inside to make them ignore what they knew to be right in the first place.
I'm going to say, Stephanie, I agree with you, but here's what I'll say. When that kid is mad and slams that door, I know what's going on in the heart. He does too. It's hatred. It's lack of control. But I hear what you're saying. Go ahead. But we definitely want to make sure that they know. Whatever you do, make sure that they know. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Oh, yes.
You can't always do that in the moment of discipline, but it does need to be done. So.
Very true. Very true. We're going to talk about that. But there needs to be a blanket of instruction about hatred, about lust, about honoring your father and mother. All this needs to be a blanket. I would just simply say, that's it. We're out of here. I would simply say this. If you make discipline extreme, difficult, all this other stuff, you won't do it very often. That's what I'll say. My biggest thing I could give to you all would be consistency over intensity. The more you make this extreme, the more you make this have to be private, the more you make this has to be 45-minute session, the less likely you're going to do it. That's what I'll simply say. And I would say, dial it back, guys. That's just my encouragement. I'm not going to be in your home judging you. I'm not going to do that. I'm disencouraging you. I would say, dial it back. Less intensity, more consistency. And you have a lot of other hours of the day to be doing a lot of stuff. But I'm out of time. Daniel, can you pray?